So a big welcome to Sangha Night, everybody. Wonderful to have so many people here and to see so many new faces who I haven't met before. I wasn't here last week. I believe most of you were here last week as well. But yeah, very special welcome if this is like your second Sangha Night or something. And yeah, I hope you're enjoying coming into such a friendly Sangha. I hope everyone's being very welcoming and talking to you a lot. I'm sure you know everyone can remember what it was like when they were new to this evening and would be really pleased to talk to you. So really great to know that we are so friendly and we'll welcome people in. So I'm talking about a map for the journey, because we're all on something of a year-long journey together this year in this Sangha. So I'm just going to outline a bit the map for that. And I'm going to try and remember to tell you the what's on things as I go along, but I might forget, in which case we'll have to do it at the end. So, our topic for the year is these five aspects of the Dharma life, of the Buddhist life, the spiritual life. The Triratna system of practice. It's often referred to as the system of practice or the system of meditation. The system of meditation is really too narrow. Sangharakshita, our teacher and founder, gave a talk called The System of Meditation decades ago, and it's been expanded into the system of practice, the system, the aspects of the Dharma life, because it's far more wide-reaching than just meditation. And if we're going to transform ourselves, we need to transform all aspects of our life, not just be meditating. So last week, Karuna Varpi talked about mandalas, and she communicated, in a way, some of what I'm hoping to get across today, probably because we've got a similar sort of take on practice. Some of what she wanted to say was some of what I would want to say about the nature of the path, about how we kind of dance through it. It's a very flexible, organic thing. So she was talking about that. So I'll say a bit more about mandalas. But yeah, just to say, in a way, the system of practice, these five aspects, they are a map. They're not the ground. They're not the territory. We'll come back to that at the end. There are so many different descriptions of what the Buddhist path is like. On the intro course, you'll have met the threefold way, ethics, meditation, and wisdom. You'll have met the noble eightfold path, briefly whizzed through those eight aspects. So now we're looking at a different classification of five aspects. They're all describing the same thing. They're all describing this wide-ranging way of living that touches all aspects of your life and your being. So this is another way. But I love this description. I think it's something very fundamental in its sort of description of the patterning of how things work, how our minds unfold as we grow spiritually. So yeah, just to recap briefly on mandalas, which was Karuna Varpi's topic last week. A mandala is a pattern, a harmonious pattern around a central focus. And in it, everything is in relationship to everything else and to the whole. So everything's influenced by where it is and what else is in this pattern. That's the sort of what it is. It's a universal symbol. And we use the word quite loosely. There are Buddhist mandalas, quite traditional Indo-Tibetan images of the sort of palace of a Buddhist deity, if you like, these sort of imaginary layouts around a Buddha or Bodhisattva, an archetypal deity. But we use the term in other ways as well. We talk about our personal mandala. You could lay out the pattern of your life, all the activities in your life, what takes up most space or what's most important goes in the middle, or you can think about it in that way. We might talk about the mandala of the Buddhist centre, sort of everything we do and everyone connected with us and how that patterns itself. And in that mandala, in the centre would be the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha. But I think, really, what I'd like to bring out today, and which Karuna Varpi was talking about, our patterning, our sort of habits and tendencies, the way we're patterned. So we've all got like the mandala of us, the mandala of ourselves. We've all got this whole set of different patterns and ways we behave and things that have happened to us in our history. We've got a sort of conditioned, self-referent ego mandala, if you like. We've got this whole set of ways we normally behave that have been influenced by everything that's happened to us. So I've got, you know, my insecurities, the things that particularly annoy me that might not annoy someone else. I've got my faith in the Dharma. I've got my shadows. I've got all sorts of, you know, light and dark, all kind of interweaving and tripping each other up in different ways. So we've all got different life experience and we've all got a different makeup. We've all got a different mandala. Each one is really unique. We've each got our own restrictions and limitations. Our own variety of mind-made suffering, our own speciality in that, really. So there's a lot of similarity. The kind of basic patterning is similar, but we've all got our own form of that. So you could think that's one mandala. And then there is the five Buddha mandala that Karunavarpi talked about a little bit last week. So there's an arrangement of five archetypal Buddhas, and we've got this blue one here this evening. There's also a yellow, a red, a green and a white one, and they're in relationship to each other. So they each express an aspect of the awakened mind, an aspect of Buddhahood, like the light of the Buddha being split in a prism into rainbow colours. So they each represent different aspects of what we want to become, what we want to grow into, what we want to journey towards, if you like. If we're on a year-long journey together, we're journeying towards the Buddha. So that's one patterning. So we've got our patterning that we come in with, and we've got this patterning of the Buddhas. How do we get from here to there? What is that journey? How do we do that? One way I like to think of it is that you could just put the two together, sort of overlay them, and let them influence each other. And the patterning changes. So you've got a three-dimensional mandala, if you like. It's not just a flat pattern, it's like multi-dimensional. There's stuff going on in all directions, and that starts to open up our patterns and change the ways we behave. Just being in contact, dwelling on the qualities of the awakened mind, on truth, wisdom, love, beauty, generosity, all those wonderful, compassionate qualities. But really what happens is, in a way, another mandala forms in those relationships in between. It's like, you could say there's the mandala of practice, the mandala of ways that we approach ourselves and our lives, that links us, that moves us between our conditioned mandala and the Buddha mandala. And that really is our topic for the year. The mandala of the spiritual life, the system of that mandala, the patterning of that, that's what we're looking at. So that's what I'm going to give you a little introduction to this evening. So as Karunavarpi said, it's actually very organic and fluid and flexible, but actually most of us like some directions to get hold of something to get started with, I think. I was thinking I don't go very far at all without consulting Google Maps these days. I like to, you know, have it telling me which way to go. And actually we do have to travel linearly to kind of get our heads around how to think about that. You know, you can look at Google Maps, but then you do get directions and it says you go here and then here and then here, doesn't it? It's quite clear. It doesn't say, well, you could, you know, skirt around here, or if you like, you could do that. You have a sort of set of instructions to follow. So I'm going to lay it out like that to start with this evening. So we're going to look at these five aspects of Buddhist practice, five ways the mind can develop and open and grow. So, first of all, my map says we go to integration. First point. So this is what we're going to be looking at for many weeks now. I don't know how many weeks. Do you know how many weeks, Taranita, that we've got on integration?
I think it's seven or eight.
Seven or eight weeks on integration. We're going to be Sangha night will be the heart of unpacking this theme, looking at integration, but many of our other activities in our Buddhist Centre Mandala will be following that theme. So we have other things to enrich what we do here. For instance, we have a series of, through the year, once a month, we have a Saturday morning for people with an established meditation practice. If you've been meditating perhaps 2 or 3 years and you know, you're quite settled into that, we have these wonderful mornings to really take people deeper in their meditation practice, expand on the meditation teaching that we can fit in our other things. And the next one of those is this Saturday, which we'll be looking at integration. So yeah, integration, I don't know if that word even means anything to you or not, or what that sounds like. I always think of it as being about integrity. It's a very related word. So it's about wholeness, wholeheartedness even. And this stage, while we're in this part of our map, it's all about becoming more aware, really, more aware and more whole. It's about learning to know ourselves well, really knowing that conditioned patterning of ourselves, knowing our conditioning, so we know how to work with that. We know what works for us, what it is we're particularly needing to address, what really helps us. Because that's what helps us to really act with integrity and true to our values, is really that sort of self-knowledge. So really important practices for this are all the mindfulness practices. We'll be looking at some of those next week briefly. The mindfulness of breathing particularly. It's just really about developing this wholehearted ability to gather yourself to one focus, in this case the breath. But it's practicing that knack. In a way, all of these things are like faculties or knacks. It's like being able to gather yourself into a wholeness, to act coherently, if you like. So practice that in the mindfulness of breathing. But all mindfulness practices that you might do through the day, we'll be talking about some next week, as I say, they will help this grounded, settled wholeness, this very sort of having your feet on the ground sense of things, and getting to know yourself, this self-awareness, self-knowledge. Ethical practice is really, really important at this step of the journey. Ethical practice is really important. Especially I associate it with honesty and awareness, those precepts, avoiding intoxicants and speaking honestly. But just all practice of the precepts, all ethical practice is really important, because this stage of the journey is very much about really taking on that actions have consequences and sort of noticing what the consequences of our actions are for ourselves and for others, and taking responsibility for that, really learning to be really grown up and know what you're doing, how you're affecting the world, and not blaming circumstances all the time, being able to really be able to take charge of yourself and your life in that way. It's about commitment, I often think, as well. Just really being able to gather yourself to say, yes, this is how I'm going to act, true to my values, in these ways. Friendship is very important at this stage of the journey as well. We need people who know us well to reflect us back and help us to become more aware of ourselves and our patternings. Particularly what we call spiritual friendship. Friendship with someone who shares your values, a friendship that's based in that resonance that you can get when you're talking about what really matters, because that gives you the trust that lets you really hear what people have got to reflect back to you about yourself. But all the time that we're in relationship with other people, we're learning about ourselves. So that's probably enough on that bit of the journey. So from there, my directions take us down to positive emotion. We haven't got a yellow pen. We're going to be having a yellow Buddha for that part of the journey. positive emotion is our sort of name for this stage of the journey, this place. But I don't know if it's always the most helpful term. Positive can sound like good rather than bad, and emotion isn't quite accurate either. It's not just about kind of feeling happy or feeling nice. I think the best phrase for this is helpful intentions.
Mm.
So it's about really strengthening our volitions, our intentions, really building up our will towards kindness, caring, opening to others, or for ourselves and others, strengthening our helpful intentions for ourselves and others. So it's about metta, it's about loving kindness. Obviously that's the real kind of big practice for this area, and all the other Brahma Viharas that Kurunavarti spelt out last week. Compassion, joy, gladness, equanimity. It's also about another positive emotion I think is really crucial, is faith, which in Buddhism isn't like the faith you associate with other religions. A good translation for the word that we translate as faith is confidence, trust, kind of hyphenated. So it's that sort of confidence that you can do this, you can actually follow through on these helpful intentions. They can really make a difference to you. So ethical practice is really crucial here, again, especially kindness and generosity, those things that really kind of open your heart if you act kindly and generously. And again, spiritual friendship and sangha are really important here. I think we have such a deep human need to belong and to be in connection with others. And once that's sort of a bit more in your life, it gives you the opportunity to expand out to a really big positive emotion. But there's something about that. And just learning to trust, actually. A lot of trust isn't about whether people are trustworthy, it's whether we have the knack of trust. So we're developing the knack of responding kindly, trustingly, openly, generously with other people at this stage of the path. And devotional practice also can, for some people at least, generate positive emotion, faith, confidence, a sense of what we're moving towards. So the next stage needs a white pen, so we'll have a black one, because, you know, it's close, isn't it? So the next staging post on our journey, spiritual receptivity or dharmic receptivity. Again, it's about awareness, as the first stage was. It's about openness, sensitivity. It's about a sensitive responsiveness, about really being able to listen very deeply to yourself, to the deeper currents in your being, so that you can really clock your responses to value, to spiritual value, to goodness, truth, beauty, wisdom. That's sort of like, yeah, and you know it when you see it, what matters to you most in life. When your heart moves with that, you know that, and you can really sort of stay with it and do more of that. It's that sort of, yeah, really tuning in deeply to know what matters to you. All meditation is really helpful for this. All meditation, all introspection and reflection. Time doing nothing actually is really helpful for this, I find. Just gazing out the window with a cup of coffee just allows other strands of myself to come into awareness. It's about just really allowing and really noticing, non-judgmental awareness. So yeah, all meditation is helpful, and particularly just sitting, because it's got that receptive, open, non-doing sort of quality to it. But also bringing this sensitive responsiveness to our engagement with, well, whatever's beautiful, whatever opens us and moves us. So the arts, whatever variety, beautiful music, beautiful painting, stimulating theatre, literature, and to nature. There's times when you're just really open to the wonder of the world, just really being able to have those times and take them in. And again, devotional practice can be helpful at this stage of the journey. Actually, a lot of this just really being with what's going on and really opening in those sort of ways naturally takes us down to the next stage. Which, again, our kind of usual name for it is spiritual death, which, like positive emotion, doesn't always have quite the right connotations, perhaps even more so. Spiritual death, I always think, sounds rather alarming and scary and perhaps something to be avoided. Kruinavarpi last week was beautifully translating it as releasing from. It's about releasing from whatever binds us, restricts us, limits us. Letting go of whatever's unhelpful and limiting. Particularly our self-clinging, our self-reference and all the suffering that causes us. All that circling in on ourselves that we tend to do. So practices at this stage, I've put renunciation and simplifying, but actually often when you're practicing Buddhism, you start to find some of the unhelpful stuff just starts to fall away. You just start to not feel like drinking quite so much, or some friends aren't quite so satisfying to spend quite so much time with, or just things start to change in your life. So it can be a really natural releasing, letting go of some of your old ways of being. But you can also work with it and decide to do that. So again, working with the precepts is really important here. Working with the precepts is about stepping away from your old restricting ways of being into a bigger, more expansive, more alive, aware way of being. So all that moving away from is spiritual death, all the letting go of what's holding you back. Retreats are a really important practice in this stage of the journey too. Going on retreats, really important. I really recommend you all do that. And if you're a man, there's a men's retreat coming up soon. Which, do you know the date? So I don't.
On my list. February.
So beginning of February, do book on that. It's a great opportunity to get away for a weekend. And yeah, just really step away from, release from your old life and try out releasing some of your old ways of being while you do it. For a weekend, you could just be someone else who doesn't do all the old things you used to do. And the situation is just very conducive for that. Just doing more meditation, hanging out with people who share your values, hearing the Dharma. Just let something happen so that things can drop away. And it can just give you a taste for a weekend of what that's like, what it's like to live a more intensive Dharma life. Dharma study is really important at this stage of the journey too. Really getting to really feel your way into what the Buddha was pointing at, really trying to get to know that well, and yeah, reflecting on the Dharma. So reading the Dharma, talking to other people about the Dharma, turning it over in your mind and in your experience so that it really starts to affect you deeply, so you really understand what the Buddha was saying. And yeah, there are particular teachings which would take you in this direction more. On the introductory course, there's an introduction to the three lakshanas, the marks of conditioned existence, which is usually a pretty mind-boggling kind of week on the course, but that sort of area is about what conduces to this releasing, letting go. And yeah, there are various practices we do, particularly in the order around this, various insight practices, particularly a practice called the six element practice, but yeah, various others that are around seeing more deeply these marks of existence, how ungraspable everything is in experience. I got my colours wrong. The white's supposed to come here. That's the way we're doing it this year.
Okay, so this one was red.
I wonder if I've got it wrong on my next sheet as well. So, at the end of our journey, we have spiritual rebirth or renewal, which is represented by the five Buddha mandala. It's represented by the Buddha, this possibility of what you could become. Who would you be without those conditioned habits? Who would you be without your suffering, without your limitations, without whatever holds you back? We all have little glimpses occasionally. We all have little glimpses of, potential, possibility. This vast, flowing, loving, open, free potential that we could become. That's what we open into as we let go of the limitations of self-clinging. So spiritual death and spiritual rebirth happen together, really. You're letting something go because you're becoming something new. They're a description of change. They're a description of every time you change. You probably didn't used to be a person who meditated. Now you might be a person who meditates once a week, or you might be a person who meditates every day. You're a different person. You've become someone new compared to what you used to be. So that old person who never meditated has died. That's spiritual death. The person who does meditate more often is a new sort of being. And the potential for that is kind of huge. It's like that's a little kind of everyday example, but where that can take you is vast. So we develop inspiration with this, well, by dwelling on our glimpses of perfect vision, those moments where you get a little sense of something more, potential possibility, and by contemplating the Buddha. Maybe you're someone who responds to images or to mantric sound, or maybe hearing the life story of the Buddha is something that inspires you, just imagining the historical Buddha. And other teachers too, other advanced spiritual practitioners, when you can just be very inspiring to hear about their lives and sort of get a sense of what a human being can become, how someone can be, or other figures that might inspire you. They might be not Buddhist at all. People do some very selfless things. So dwelling on anything like that that really inspires you, gives you a sense of what it would be to be more than your limitations. And Sangha is really important again for this. Together we are so much more than any one of us. There's something that happens when we come together, which is like this glimpse of what's more, the more than, something that's, sometimes you can just really taste it when you're in a shrine room with other people. It's like, the energy's beyond each individual kind of set of concerns. And again, devotional practice brings us into relationship with the Buddha, with the sort of whatever we're imagining the best of a human being could be. So in a way, another way I like to think about it is there's two pairs of faculties. Integration and positive emotion really go together, really support each other. They kind of run alongside each other. You need each of them to develop the other. Spiritual death and spiritual rebirth are definitely two sides of the coin. I don't really ever know how to talk about one without talking about the other. They're just the same thing for me. And receptivity, you need right through. It's like a deepening receptivity that runs through the whole lot. So this is looking at the path as a progression, as a set of stages, which is a helpful way of doing it. We certainly need a really good basis of integration and positive emotion before spiritual death and rebirth can really be sustained, before that can really be something you can live with. And that's why we teach the mindfulness of breathing and the metta bhavana and ethics and friendship and all the things we teach as our main practices at the start of the spiritual life, at the start of the Dharma life. You need to build a really good basis in those areas for spiritual death and spiritual rebirth to kind of take a hold. We get glimpses of them right from the start, or even without really practicing, we get those moments where we kind of go, you know, we know there's something more to life. And that's really inspiring, that really motivates our commitment to practice. It's really important to honour and cherish those glimpses. But until the point of ordination in the Triratna Buddhist community, we really encourage you to develop lots of positive emotion and integration. And then these later stages are emphasised more from ordination onwards. So that's one set of directions that Google Maps threw out, and I do think it's a logical one. But you know, they always give you like a choice of routes, don't they? You could go this way or you could go that way. So you could, you know, weave your way through in a different way. You might fall over if you try and just focus on spiritual rebirth all the time without the others, but you find the others were necessary, supportive and flowered from it. You could start with any of them, actually, in a way. They all support each other, they all lead to each other. But let's go back to the map. Yeah, I did get my colours wrong again. Oh well. So yeah, I think any practice which is truly effective as a Buddhist practice will include something of all five of these. You could think about it in your experience. If you think of, like, you know, the best meditation you can remember, there might have just been a moment in it where you thought, oh, this is a bit different, something else is going on now. Did it have a quality of wholeheartedness and commitment? Did it have some sort of awareness of what was going on and what to do? Did you feel more open, expansive, kind, generous, happy as a result of meditation ever? Was there some sense of kind of something deeper in you opening, sense of kind of being more responsive to, more sensitive to your breath even? Could you kind of tune in with it more delicately? And to have that moment, or extended time as it may have been, where you felt like you were really meditating, did you let go of something? Did some of those obsessive thoughts settle, release? The emotional tangles you might often be caught in, did they release just for a bit? And did it feel like a glimpse of something more, some potential, some opening into a different way of being? It's like there's something of the flavour of all of them, I think, in all of our best moments. And you can do the same analysis with anything. When you go, is this practice, is this the Dharma? You can look and see if those things are all there. You can think about the quality of communication with a spiritual friend. You can think about your work. Does that conduce to you having, maybe, you know, in a different way, maybe in an everyday way, in your work, is there the opportunity to be generous, to be more self-aware, to let go of something, to move towards something that you want to move towards, to listen a little bit more? Your life as a whole, how does it help? How does it support these knacks? Or can you apply these faculties in your life somehow? But yeah, we do have to find our own way. It is different for each of us because we're all so different. We've each got our own journey. So we might pick a slightly different route on the map. And it will probably change as you go along. You know, if you've got your sat-nav or Google Maps on and it picks up there's traffic ahead these days, and it's getting even better, it will say, oh, you know, actually now I think you should go a different way and save yourself a few minutes. Do you want to do that or not? So you have to be really responsive to where you're going, and, you know, be willing to sort of change course a bit and go, actually, okay, that's been really good for a few months, but actually I think now I need to go over there a bit more. We're going to be spending the next many weeks in this blue corner of the map at the integration way station. And, you know, you'll have noticed, like in almost all the stages, I talked about ethics and I talked about devotion and I talked about meditation. It's like we need all of those things at every stage. So in the integration section of the year, we're going to be doing all of those practices that we normally do. It's not like, you know, Dharma was saying earlier, does that mean we're just going to do mindfulness for weeks and weeks and weeks? So it's not like that. It's like we have to include all of our lives looking at it about how it can integrate us more. So yeah, we've got Taranita and I put together a whole program. We've got a week on ethics and a week on letting go of obsessive thinking, and a week on, I can't remember them all, a week on the Buddha's life story. We're just, yeah, bringing lots of different aspects, elements of the path into our integration season. And yeah, I just really hope that you'll really throw yourselves wholeheartedly, as integratedly as you can, into this journey together for the year. I think that would be a fantastic thing to do. We do all have to find our way. Really, the path isn't something you walk on, it's us. It's us growing, us developing, us opening, unfolding, our minds, our hearts opening. And we all have to find our own way of doing that. But, I'd really encourage you to do what you can to be here each week and to have a look at all the other things we've got on and see how much you can join in with, so that we can all travel together. We're a pretty big party to keep kind of in one caravan, but I'm sure we can do it. And in the groups today, we're going to just spend a little while thinking about if there's anything we could do to help us more fully take part in this journey. After tea, we're going to do a short ritual to dedicate ourselves, if we want to being part of this journey together. So you can think about what that would mean you doing. Maybe you need to make sure you've got more Tuesday night babysitters, or maybe you need to make sure you leave work on time on a Tuesday, or maybe you need to think about how you're going to find time to meditate a bit more, or, you know, it's just something that's very general. What could you do to help you take part a bit more? That's our question.